Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Yuma Daf Ayin Hey. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur 3 lines from the top of Daf Ayin Hey. As you can see by scanning the Gemara, we will be encountering a bow tie marking. This is a series marking that we started in our previous shiur, where we introduce a number of drushes given by Rav Ami and Rav Asi. And you can see they continue down halfway down this page. So we continue with a pasuk, Daigo Belev Ish Yasichena. Rav Ami v'Rav Asi, Chan Omar, Yasicheno Midaito, that if a person has a daigo, a worry in his heart, he should put it out of mind. V'Chan Omar, Yasicheno Lachirim, the word Yasicheno having to do with speech, talk it over, say it over to others. And there's a note on the side that says that by making your trouble aware to bringing the awareness of your trouble to others, they will pray for your benefit. V'nochosh ofor lachmoi. Pasuk says that the bread or the food of the serpent is the dirt. Rabami Ravasi. Here the Gemara gets involved with a discussion that we introduce on the side under our No Sour topic heading, Kilolas HaNochosh She'eino Oichel Ola Ofar. The curse that the serpent was cursed with resulted in his being able to eat only dirt. Rav Ami Vervasi, continuing in the Gemara, Chad Omar Afilu Oichel Kol Madani Oilam, even if it were to eat all of the fineries or delicacies of the world, Toyim Bohem Tam Ofar. He tastes only the taste of dirt. V'chad Omar Afilu Oichel Kol Madani Oilam Ein Daito Miusheves Olav Ad Sheyoichal Ofar. The other approach says that even if he eats all the delicacies and fineries of the world, he won't have peace of mind until he eats dirt. And of course, the Nochosh is referred to as reference to the Nochosh HaKadmoni, the original Nochosh in the story of Gan Eden, who attempted to cause man and was successful in his attempt, cause man to sin by eating from the forbidden fruit. We continue with a Tanaic source that points out the contrast between the Almighty and versus man. And on the side, we explain under our Nosei Mivne heading, because in this source we will also be introducing a triangle, one of our series markings. Einoi doime, we've written on the side, Einoi doime kisha kodesh boruchu mekalel leha de mekalel boser v'dam. You can't compare the results of a divine curse as opposed to when a man out of wrath curses. Omar Rabbi Yossi, Bo'u re'ei shelo kemidas HaKadosh Baruch Hu midas boser v'dam. Note, the ways of the Almighty are not the ways of man. Midas boser v'dam maknit es chavero yoridimo l'chayov. In the case of man cursing his fellow man, so the result is there's a ongoing enmity and strife. Rashi says, "Yored imo l'chayv b'chol dover shehu yochol laknito lafsido hu yored." The Gemara continues, "Avol HaKadosh Baruch Hu eino kein." The in the case of the Kodesh Baruch Hu, it's not the same. Kilel es hanachash, the Kodesh Baruch Hu cursed the serpent, and yet look at the result. Oyle legag mizaynosav imo yored lamato mizaynosav imo. Whereas when man engages in strife, one gets his friend angry, so the response is to try to take revenge in any way possible, as we saw in the Rashi. But when the Kodesh Baruch Hu's wrath is aroused, and his response is a curse, the Nochash, for example, aroused the wrath of the Kodesh Baruch Hu, and what was the result? Well, wherever it goes, it finds its food. Granted, its food is dirt, but it goes to the roof, its food is there. It goes to the floor, to the bottom, its food is there. Kilel es Kenan. Kenan was the son of Ham. Ham, who had disparaged his father Noach, so Kenan, a descendant of a son of Ham, was cursed, and the curse was that he and his descendants would be slaves. They would enslave to other men. Well, what's the result of someone becoming a slave? Oichel mashe raboi oichel, v'shoyse mashe raboi shoyse. Whatever the master prepares, the slave eats from that. Whatever the master drinks, the slave drinks from that. Kilo eso isha, hakol rotzin achareho. The woman in the story of creation, we see that she was cursed, and yet we know that women are always the center of the desire, are always pursued by men. Kilel es ha'adama, hakol nizoinen hemeno. The earth was cursed, and yet all sustenance comes forth from the earth. Everyone is dependent on it. The Pasuk in Bamidbar describes the Jewish people complaining regarding their food situation, and in their complaints they said, Zocharnu es hadoga asher noichal b'mitzrayim chinom. And we recalled the doga, and the Gemara will focus on what that word means, that we ate, consumed in Mitzrayim for free. Now, on the side of the Mordor no say, our topic heading, we've written, we'll see here a machlokes Rav and Shmuel b'mashmos hamila doga b'posuk zochanus doga ashenoicha b'mitzrayim chinom. What does the word doga mean? So the Gemara continues, Rav Shmuel chalomar dogim, one says it means fish, v'chalomar arayas, the other one says illicit relations. Man diomar dogim dechtiv nochal, the posuk that has doga in it is followed by the word nochal, that we ate. No. So the word fish would be the most appropriate noun to go along with the verb eat. Umandom arayas dechtiv chinom. The one that says arayas, so that's because you have the word chinom that accompanies it. On the surface, that would mean that it's something that you get for nothing. So intimacy is not something that you ordinarily pay for. The Gemara continues, Ulaman de'omar arayas hoksiv nochal, according to the approach that doga means arayas, forbidden relations, well, what does the verb of nochal, eat, have to do with that? The Gemara says, Lishno me'alya nokat. It's a euphemism. Dechtiv, there's a pasuk in Mishle that is describing immorality, and it uses as a euphemism the word ochla to describe the action. This pasuk is describing the behavior of a harlot, and it says ochla umochto pia v'yomer lo po'alti oven. She eats and wipes her mouth and says, "I did nothing wrong." But so you see that the word ochla is used to connote intimacy. Ulaman to Omar Dogi Maichinom. If you accept the approach that Doga means eating fish, how does the word Chinom figure? The word Chinom means for nothing, for free. So the Gemara answers, Dahavu Maisin Lahu Mehefkero, that in Mitzrayim they found fish from that which was in the wild, so that was unowned. Hefkero is that which is unowned. The Omar Mark, Sho Yisrael Shovim Mayim, it was taught that when the Jews would, in Mitzrayim, in Egypt, drew water, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mazin Lahem B'soch HaMayim Dogim Tanim B'Kadehem, the Kodesh Baruch Hu, the Almighty, brought small fish to their kadehem, their receptacles, their pitchers with which that they used, or their that they used for drawing water. Bishlam Olamanda Omar Dogim Aval Arayas Lo Pritzi Bahu, according to the pshat, the explanation that this is a reference, Doga means fish, but as far as immorality, so they weren't so exposed to that, or they weren't, they didn't resign themselves to that. Haynu dichtiv gan no'ul achosi kalo gal no'ul mayan chosum. Without literally translating the pasuk in Shir HaShirim, it's describing a that which is locked up, a gan na'ul or a gal na'ul ma'ayon chosum. Ma'ayon chosum would be a sealed wellspring, so that the idea of being moral and chaste would be conveyed by this idea of that part of the anatomy is closed and not participant in immorality and in intimacy. So it's said to be locked up. Elolamandi Omar Arayis my Mayon Chosum. But if you say that they had exposed themselves to illicit relations, so then what's sealed up about them? The Gemara says, even so, even if they had yielded to temptation, however, they didn't go as far as yielding to that kind of illicit relationship that was banned to the B'nai Noach. The seven Noahide laws included in which were forbidden relations. Mehanoch the Asirin lo pritzibu, from those forbidden relations that were forbidden to B'nai Noach, and we can point out now, based on what Rashi says and is found in the Gemara Sanhedrin, that there are lists of forbidden relations, that you find a more limited list applying to the B'nai Noach, and a more expanded list applying later after the giving of the Torah to the Jewish people. So the regarding the more limited, maybe we'll call it the more severe type of immoral infraction, is something they were not guilty of. But as far as other kinds of relations and, let's say, loose immoral ways, they were guilty of that. So the Mayon Chosum, the sealed wellspring, as a euphemism for a controlled life of intimacy, is true with respect to the forbidden relations of the B'nai Noach, that they did not violate. Bishlamo, the Mandom Arayas, Hainu Dichti, Vaishma Moshe Soom Boichel Mishbechoisov, according to the approach that says that they had yielded to immorality, the pasuk will make sense that says that Moshe Rabbeinu heard them after the giving of the Torah. They were crying over mishpachosov, over families, meaning al iske mishpachosov shenesru lohem lishkav etzlam, that they discovered that they were now banned from having relations with relatives that they had previously yielded to. Elo lamantomar dogim mai boichel mishpachosov, but according to that approach that says that they were consuming fish. So what's the crying over matters of morality? That what were they crying about? The Gemara says, "Ha v'ha havoi." In fact, both were present, that they had been eating fish, and they also had yielded to desires of lust that now they found themselves restricted from. Es hakishuim ves avitichim. In the same portion in the Torah describing their complaints, it says they complained over not having these types of food, vegetation, kishuim and avatichim, that they claimed they were enjoying in Mitzrayim. Rav Ami Vervasi, and here we're going to continue with our discussion concerning the mon. After all, the Jews were eating mon in the Midbar, and the characteristic of mon is that it could taste like any food you would imagine. So on the surface, you would think that why should they be bemoaning the loss of kishu avatichim when they were able, through the mon, to perceive any food? So Rav Ami and Rav Asi, Chad Omar, one explains, Tam kol aminim to'amu b'mon, tam chameshes aminim halolu lo to'amu bo. In fact, they were able to perceive the taste of almost all foods through the mon, with the exception of five items that the Pasuk enumerates, amongst which are Kishuim and Avatichim. Two of them are mentioned over here. That these five items that the Torah enumerates, they were not able to perceive even its taste. V'chad omar, tam kol aminim to'amu, ta'amon umamoshin. With regard to all food items, they were able to perceive the taste and also the texture of any food item. Ha'halolu, with the five food items mentioned here, including the kishum and avatichim, tamon velo mamoshin. The taste they were able to perceive, but the texture not. The Pasuk describes the mon by saying, v'hu kezera god lavon. That's a Pasuk describing the mon. So it describes it as Zera Gad and Lavan. Omar Rav Asi, Agoyol Kigida, it was round like Gida. Gida is a seed of a certain type of plant. Rashi calls it Garin Shel Alindri. So there's Alindri, a plant, and its seed is characteristically round. The lavon, so the mon appeared as something round, and lavon kemargalis, and it was white as a pearl. What the Gemara is saying, and Rashi makes the point that when the Pasuk describes it as Zera God lavon, it's not that you should not think that the God or the Gida seed is white. That's not the case. But rather, Zera God is a shape, and Lavon is a color. So that's what we just explained in the Gemara. Tonu Rabbanan, and we have a Tanaic source that goes that also deals with the appearance of the mon. God, Shedoima Lezera Pishton Begivoylin. It looks like the flax seed in its stalks, which is round. Achirim omrim God shedoyme lehagoda shemoyshechas liboy shel odom kemayim. The Achirim approach is taking the word God and darshaning it, not viewing it as a descriptive word, but rather the characteristic of the mon is that it drew people to it like water flows. Or people would seem to flow to it, to be drawn to it. Tanya, and the word God in this case is compared to Haggadah, which would be in the realm of Torah learning, there are agadic passages which are generally speaking of a more popular nature, where you'll find larger crowds, people drawn to hear lectures or learn sections that are of an agadic nature, stories and parables, as opposed to legal sections. That draws people, hence the term God, referring to the Mon, is something that drew people. Tanyo idoch, God, shemagid lohem Israel. Magid is, it would tell, it would reveal, it would inform. Iben tisha l'rishon, iben shivala achroin. Before we go further in the Gemara, let's glance at the side under our topic heading that will serve as an introduction to this section of the Gemara. Under the Nosei, we've written, Koichus shel Hamon, there was a strength in the Mon, legalois dvorim mistorin, to reveal secret information, to reveal secrets, bekach, through the following phenomenon, shekamut meduyekes magia l'chol nefesh, which a certain fixed amount is assigned to each person. The amount is in Omer, and lo pochos v'lo yoser, not less and not more. That information is important as we go on in the Gemara. We just had read that the Mon will reveal, in the event of a woman, let us say, that had been married and her husband died and she remarried someone but didn't wait the required amount of time between marriages in order to establish, was she pregnant when her husband died? So the issue then is, after she remarries within, let's say she marries within 3 months of the death of her first husband, and then 7 months after her marriage to a second man, 7 months later, a child is born. Is this child a child of the first husband, and she, the woman, experienced a 9-month pregnancy, or is this a seven-month pregnancy, as a result, a child of the second husband? So, the family who would gather the mon, if, let us say, this second husband had that just married this woman, in this family unit there are three people, but let's say only two measures of mon would be found in their house. After they gathered their food, they would measure how much is in their house. They would discover only two measures. That would indicate that the child is not theirs. In other words, not this man's child. This child is related to the first household. If three measures were found in that family, so then it indicates it's a ben sheva la'achron. Lavon, the pasuk described it as Zera Gad Lavon, Shemalbin Avunaseim Sheisrael. Malbin means to whiten the sins of Israel. It atones for their sins. So how does it atone? So by virtue of the fact that the mon fell every day, and for us it's easy to talk about that it fell every day, but if you were living at the time, we mentioned in the previous year that mon is not something that could have been stored up. So the food that they got for that day is what they got. Did they know for sure that they were going to have food the next day? So out of this deep concern, and of course you're dealing with a wandering people in the desert, so they knew that they had no other source of food other than the Almighty. So they would have to become, as the Lashon that Rashi says, Mishabdin Liba Lamokom, they enslaved their hearts to the Almighty. They became very conscious of the of God's involvement in their daily existence, so they naturally became very subservient and and faithful in their ways. So as a result of that, so any sins that they may have violated, they were constantly atoning for any sins, realizing, of course, that this was coming as a result of their not having any food other than the mon, which fell only on a daily basis and not something that could have been stored up. That's the idea of malbin avonisam shisrael. This caused them to become very dutiful and subservient to the Almighty. Tanya, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Kishem Shanovi Hoya Magid Lohem Lisrael, Mashe Bechurn Umashe Bestokin, just as a prophet was able to reveal, if heaven ordained such, was able to reveal that which was hidden in the Chorin and Stokin, in the holes and cracks of people. In other words, in he the Novi, the prophet, was able to reveal that which was otherwise unknown. Kachamon magid lohem Yisrael mashib chorin umashib stokin. So to the mon had this capacity of revealing that which was unknown. Ketzad. Examples. Shnaim shibo lifnei Moshe l'din. Two people would approach Moshe Rabbeinu in a court case or a controversy. Ze omer avdi gonavta. One would claim, you stole my slave. Ze omer ato moharto li. The other one said, what do you mean I stole your slave? You sold him to me. Omer lehem Moshe dino labokir mishpat. Moshe Rabbeinu's response would be the case or the verdict will wait till the morning. Well, what do you mean it'll wait till the morning? Lemochar, the next day, im nimtza oimroi beveis rabo rishon, biyadua sheze gonvoi. If the omro is a measure, we mentioned this before, the measure of mon was found in the original person's house, the extra measure that would have been for the servant was found in the original person's house, biyadua sheze gonvo. That would reveal that the party currently holding on to him had stolen him. And then that slave shouldn't be in the second party's house. Hence, the food for that stolen slave is in the first person's house. In the case of the desert, we can say the first person's tent. V'im nimtza omro bebayis raboi sheni. And if the measure of mon is found, the extra measure of mon for the servant is found in the second party's domicile, biyodua shizeh mochulo, then it's known that the first fellow actually sold the servant to the second person, and he, the second one, is the legitimate owner. V'chein ish v'isha shebo lifnei Moshe l'din. Likewise, in the case of a domestic quarrel, where a man and woman would come to Moshe, ze omer hi sorcha alai, the husband would claim that she behaved unfaithfully, and she went astray on me, the he omeris hu tisorach olai, and she claims that he was improper to me, and as a result, I want my ksuba, I want to be divorced, and I want my financial guarantee as is provided for in the ksuba. Omar lohem Moshe dino laboker mishpat. So Moshe Rabbeinu responds, like we saw before, let's wait till the morning. Lamochar im nimsa oimro beveis by law. In the morning, if the portion designated for her was found in her husband's domicile, liyadua shehi sorchalov, that would show that his claim is correct and that she was unfaithful to him. Nimsa oimro beveis avia, if her portion is found in her father's home, then biyodua shehu sorach olal, then it's known that he behaved towards her improperly, and that she, her claim to want out and go back to her father's house is justified. Ksiv, we have in the next line descriptions by way dealing with location of mon. Three different locations are alluded to, and the Gemara will have to resolve the three psukim with one another. So, ksiv uberedes hatal al hamachane lailo yorad hamon olov. The pasuk says upon the descent of the tal on the camp or within the camp, it's mashma from here that the mon fell where they dwelled within the camp. Uksiv vayetse ha'om v'loktu. Another pasuk says vayetse, they went out. In other words, they went out of the camp to collect. Uksiv, a third pasuk says shatu ha'om v'loktu. Shatu is an expression to indicating going even further out in order to collect. Okay, so how do we resolve these three different location descriptions? Tzadikim yorad al pesach botehem. The righteous had merited the mon falling at the entrance to their domiciles. Beinonim, the people of righteous but also non-wicked, the middle of the road type people. Beinonim, yotsu v'loktu, the middle of the road people, went immediately out of the camp and found their portions there. Rishoyim, shotu v'loktu, the wicked would have to go to great distances to find their portions. Ksiv lechem, uksiv ugois, uksiv v'tochanu. Again, you have three psukim describing, in this case, not location, but state in which they found the mon. One describes it as lechem. Lechem indicates something that's already prepared. It's literally, it's bread, but it's something that's already baked. Another pasuk says ugos. Ugos is dough before it's baked, and tochanu is something that needs to be ground. Would indicate something even before it's in its dough form, rather in its raw form. Hoketza, again, how do we resolve these three different status descriptions? Tzadikim lechem. The tzadikim, when they found their mon, they found it in a ready-to-eat state. Beinonim, ugos. With the beinonim, it still needed a final stage of preparation before being able to eat. Rishoyim, tochanu berechayim. The wicked amongst them had to take their portion of mon and grind it and go through all the preparatory stages before it would be ready to be eaten. Some like to quip, what would the bracha be over mon? So in the case of the tzaddikim that received the mon as lechem, instead of saying hamotzi lechem min haaretz, maybe they would have to say a brocha hamotzi lechem min hashamayim, the bread that came from heaven. But that would be a separate discussion for our purposes. The pasuk mentioned odochu b'meducha, the need to crush it in a grinder. Om Rabbi Yoma Rav, V'itemer of Chama Rabbi Chanina. Some have Rabbi Yuda saying this, other versions have Rabbi Chama saying this. Melameit Shiorat Lohem L'Yisrael Im Hamon Tachshitei Noshim Dovor Shenidoch B'Meducha. The Pasuk indicates that together with the mon, there also fell spices that are used for making perfumes. Tachshite Noshim is a reference to perfumes or spices that are generally needed to be ground, nidoch b'meducha, to be crushed in a crusher in order to make the fragrance. Ubishloi b'porur, also a pasuk with regard to the mon, Amar of Chama, Malamit Shor Lehem Mon Im Hamon, Shor Lehem Li Yisrael Im Hamon, this teaches us that they fell together with the mon, Tzike Kedera. Rashi says Tavlin L'Tavshil Orev Umavusam. This is spices in the context of food spices, and that's what Bishlo B'Porur tells us, that together with the mon there also fell spices for cooking. V'heim hevi'u alav oid nedava baboker baboker. This pasuk is found from Sefer Shmos, my baboker baboker. Omer Shmuel bar Nachmeni, Omer Rabbi Yonason. We should point out that this pasuk is in the context of the construction of the Mishkan, which of course took place in the desert, and it makes reference to the various donations that were made. The pasuk in Shmos Perek Lamed Vav Pasuk Gimel reads, "Vayichu mifnei Moshe es kol haTruma asher heviu bnei Yisrael limleches avodas hakodesh la'asos oisa, v'hem heviu elav oid nedava baboker baboker." The Bezalel and Eliyahu, who were charged with the construction of the Mishkan, gathered all of the donations made by the people of Israel, and additional donations were made, and it says they brought additional donations, baboker, baboker. So on that expression, the Gemara comments, my baboker, baboker, what is meant by that? Omar of Shmuel bar Nachmeni, Omar of Yonason. Midovar sheyorad lohem baboker baboker. These donations of precious items that were used in the construction of the Mishkan were brought from that which fell every morning. Malame, this teaches us sheyorad lohem Yisrael avonim toivus margolios im hamon, that together with the mon there fell precious stones and gems and pearls every morning. Shenemar, Vanesim heviu es avnei hashoyam. Before we deal with the pasuk, we read just another phrase, Tana, and there is a teaching or an explanation of this pasuk, Nesim mamish. There is an opinion that the word Nesim is a reference to literal Nesim. Now, what does literal Nesim mean? Nesim are clouds. V'chenu omer. You see clouds referred to by Nesim in this pasuk. Nesim v'ruach v'geshem oyen describes an overcast sky without rainfall, but rain is expected, and rain comes in clouds. And in this pasuk, clouds are described by the word Nesim. This, by the way, is in contrast with the with what people would call the simpler meaning of the pasuk Nesim, where the heads of the community, Nasi, a prince or a leader. But you can see the alternative explanation right over here, Nesim meaning clouds. So that together with the mon, there also fell all kinds of precious gems as well. There's a message in this kind of agoda that should ring loud and clear, even though it's a function of reading between the lines. The pasuk tells us in Shmos Perek Lamed Beis pasuk Tezayin that in the time of the Beis Hamikdash there was a flask that was kept known as the Tzinsenas Hamon. They were ordered from the time of here in the Midbar to set aside a flask of mon that would be stored in the Mishkan and the Beis Hamikdash. And Rashi points out that there would arise a generation that was approached by the prophet, by the Novi, asking, why are you not engaged in Torah study? And people would say, well, how can we study Torah? We need to pursue our parnos, our income. We're so laden down by our jobs. How could we possibly have time to study Torah? So the Novi would take out this Tzinsenes Hamon and show the population, if what you're concerned about is your income, income is something provided by heaven. In other words, even though there's an accepted idea that someone has to make some effort for his pursuit of income, but after all efforts are invested, the actual providing of income comes through that which is heavenly ordained. And that's a very broad topic. There's a lot more to elaborate on in that context. However, by seeing this Gemara, it drives the point home all the more that the Almighty, not when bringing the mon, not only does the mon represent food, but together with the mon, all kinds of wealth came to them as well. And the phenomenon of the Almighty providing an income, even though it may appear in a more hidden way now that we are not traveling in the desert, but it's the same source that provides man with his wherewithal. Needless to say that you can have several shops that sell the same type of wares, and one person makes a great income and the other one selling the same wares, same basic shop, same hours, has a hard time making ends meet. How do you explain those things? So at the end of the day, one should come to the realization that income is heavenly ordained. And even when it comes to people amassing large amounts of money, who guarantees you'll be able to hold on to the wealth? Heaven forbid, all kinds of major costs can befall an individual that he had no way of even knowing about ahead of time, causing him to expend large amounts of funds just to overcome his troubles and costs. So the topic of income versus study of Torah, how to balance these matters and all, is one is reminded of these things when learning about the mon, and the fact that together with the mon you see, in addition to the basic food that the mon represented, additional wealth is also accounted for. I highly recommend looking up the source we quoted before in Sefer Shmos, Perek Lamed Beis, Pasuk Tes Zayin, and giving careful attention to Rashi and that which he explains over there. We continue with more mon information. The pasuk says, "V'hoya ta'amoi ketam lishad hashemen." Omar Rabbi Avo, and we're going to be looking at this word shin lishad, the root shin dalid. What does that represent? So Rabbi Avo says, "Mo shod ze tinok toim bo kama tomim." Shod is a woman's breast who is nursing her child. So the child is said to perceive many different tastes based on what the mother eats, so that has an effect on the taste of the milk that the child is drinking. So a child tastes different tastes from the breast of his mother, Af Hamon kol zman shisrael ochlin osoy motzin bo kamatomim. They can perceive many different tastes, the Jewish people, as they ate the mon. Iko diamri l'shade mamush. Here the word, the word shin dalid, or the as it appears here l'shad, is taken as l'shade compared to a demon. Now, what characteristic is there of a demon that has that is in common with the mon? Ma shade zem is hapech l'kama givonim. And here we'll translate, because when dealing with these type of topics, they are rather esoteric and mysterious in nature. We are limited to what the Gemara tells us by way of translation, realizing there is more to it than meets the eye. But the translation indicates that the demon has the ability to appear in many different shades. And how do you like that for a pun? Shades is of color, and maybe there's something to it. The Hebrew word shade and the English word shade in the context of shades of color, whatever it is, that's what it means when they say kama givonim, different colors or shades of color. Af hamon mishapech l'kama tomim. So too, the mon can change into many different tastes. Vayomer Moshe b'seis Hashem lochem bo'erev bosot lechol v'lechem b'boker lisboa. they Pusuk mentions that Moshe says, when Hashem gives you in the evening meat and in the morning bread for your satisfaction. Tana Mishmei Rabbi Yehoshua ben Korcha. Following Tanaic source reflects this pasuk. Basar Shashalai Shalai Kahagen. Meat that they requested improperly. Nitan Lohem Shalai Kahagen. Was given to them in an improper way. In contrast, we continue at the top of Amud Beis, Lechem Shoshalo Kahogen, bread that they sought properly, Nitan Lohem Kahogen, was given to them properly. A little explanation is needed here. So, Rashi at the top of Amud Beis, if we start with the second line, it seems that Rashi's text was in a reversed order from that which we have in the Gemara. So Rashi on the second line from the top deals with Bosar Shalu Shaloko again. Their request for meat, and we know that the Jewish people in the desert, even though they were receiving mon, they requested meat as well. Now, what is it? What was improper about their request? Mitoch Keres Mlea. They didn't really need to request meat. So the literal translation is from a full stomach they were requesting it. Sharei, and here, what do we mean by a full stomach? Sharei mikne rav hoylem. They had, upon their exodus from Egypt, large quantities of cattle. Mikne rav, large quantities of cattle. So they didn't need to bother the Almighty if they really wanted meat. So they had access to meat without bothering the Almighty. So, Nitan Lohem Shaloka Hogan, the Almighty did, however, provide for them meat in the form of the slav, and the Rashi says, Yorad Lohem Im Hashecha. They received their meat, but it came in the as darkness fell. Sha'a She'ena Ru'uya Lasakin Oisa'ad Shasa Suda. It's as darkness fell, so they didn't have enough time to prepare it in time for their evening meal. They got meat, but it came to them in bad timing, we'll say. They didn't have time to prepare it. The Rashi at the top line says, Lechem she'shalo kahogen, she'ief she'blo lechem, lechem known as the staff of life. People, it was perceived that man would the basic sustenance of life was bread. So that's something that is it's reasonable to request. So Nitan Lohem Kahogen, Rashi says Baboker, Shiesheus Lachino. That was provided for them in the morning. We saw before the Pasuk Baboker Baboker, giving them enough time to prepare it in any way they wanted to prepare it. We saw before also that the mon could be prepared in different ways. So, but the main point of this drasha is that if what you asked for was something that should have been asked for, you received it in good timing. If it was unnecessary to request it and you did, you would get it, but with bad timing. Mikan, the Gemara continues, Mikan limdo Torah derech eretz, from the reference to meat and evening in the pasuk that we learned, the Torah teaches us the proper way is shelo yochal odom boser elo balayla. The time for eating the meat is at night. The problem with the mon, and this is a point the Torah Tamima explains, the problem with them and the meat and their request was that they didn't need to request it, and as a result of that the timing was off. However, the time to eat the meat is in fact in the evening. The best case scenario would be that you get access to the meat while you have enough time in the day to prepare it for the evening meal, and that's what this source is telling us, that the proper time for eating it is, in fact, in the evening. The Gemara asks, "V'omra Abaye, ha haiman de isle sudasa lo lochle elo b'yamama." Abaye says that the proper time for eating a meal is in the day, not at night. So the Gemara answers, "Kein yamama kamrinan," eating it in light, but at night. Now, how do you resolve that? You have lighting. For example, Rashi says, "Bor avuka," having torchlight, so that the time for eating your meat meal would be in the evening with light. Omar Rav Acha Bar Yankiv, B'tchilo HaYisrael Doimin Ketarnagolim, Sheminakun Ba'ashpo. At first, the Jewish people were like chickens that had no fixed time for eating, would always eat little bits throughout the day. Some would refer to this as snacking all the time. Literally, tarnagolim are chickens. Menakri b'ashpo is pecking away at garbage heaps, which is characteristic of chickens. So that's what used to be. Achibo Moshe v'kovalahem zman sud, until Moshe Rabbeinu came along and established what we refer to as proper meal times, morning and evening. Habosar oidenu bein shinehem. This pasuk is referring to the parsha of the slav. We mentioned before that they had requested meat, and the Kodesh Baruch Hu provided it for them in the form of the slav, a type of bird, a fowl. And you have two psukim. One says that the meat was still between their teeth, and they died. The Kodesh Baruch Hu punished those that were demanding the meat, as you can see by looking at the psukim in Bamidbar Perek Yud Aleph. So this pasuk, this has to be pasuk Lamed Gimel, says that the meat was still between the teeth. Uksiv ad chodesh yamin. The other pasuk, in pasuk Chof in Perek Lamed Aleph, says that they lasted a month. Ha ketzat beinonim la'alter. People that were not totally wicked, that were middle of the road, that had demanded meat, they died immediately. That's beinonim la'alter mesu. The Shoyim, the completely wicked, mitstarin v'hochanat chodesh yomim. They didn't have an instant death, but rather their death was through suffering over a month period of time. The pasuk says, again in that context, regarding the birds, the slav, vayishtechu. Vayishtechu literally would mean that the birds came in layers. The ground was filled with layers of birds. Omer Reish Lakish, al tikri vayishtechu, ela vayishchatu. Don't read it as layers, but rather slaughtering. Melamed, shenishaivu sunem sheyisrael shchita. The phrase here is presented in a euphemistic form. Sonam Shisrael would literally mean the enemies of Israel, but it means the Jews themselves. So this teaches us the appearance of this word Vayishtechu, and Reish Lakish's reread of it, Vayishchatu, teaches us that the Jewish people, because of their demand for the meat, deserved death. And in fact, that's what happened. Shchita means they themselves deserve to be slaughtered. Shotoach. The Pasuk uses that word, Shotoach. Tana Mishmedi Rabbi Shua ben Korcha. We have a Tanaic source taught in the name of Rabbi Shua ben Korcha. Al tikri shotoach ela shachut. Don't read it as spread out, but rather slaughtered. Melamed sheyorad lahem l'Israel imamon davar shetoun shchita. This teaches us that there fell together with the mon something that required slaughtering. Rashi adds, this umalamit shehaslov davar shetoun shchita haya. This teaches us that the slov, which was the bird, the fowl that was provided for them, is something that requires slaughtering. So from this reread, we learn that birds need slaughtering. Omar Rebbe, v'chimikana talamit. So Rebbe responds and says, "Is this your source for birds needing slaughtering? Valokvar ne'amar. Is there not a pasuk that says vayamter aleihem ke'ofer sher kechol yamim oif konof?" This pasuk is in Tehillim, but it describes the food that Kodesh Baruch Hu provided for the Jewish people in the Midbar. and he the gist of the pasuk, he rained down upon them like dirt, like a sandstorm. He rained upon them shares, food, and like the sand of the sea, oif konof. The Tanya, Rebbe Oimer, the Rebbe points out there's a pasuk that says v'zavachta kasher tzivisicho. This is a pasuk in the Torah itself, and it says you shall slaughter as I commanded you. Now, if one reads the Torah from Bereishis to Li'enei Kol Yisrael to the very end, from cover to cover, as they say, you won't find in the Torah how slaughtering is to be done. And yet, the Torah pasuk says, and you shall slaughter as I commanded you. So, what do you mean, as I commanded you? If you look in the Torah, there is no command of how to do it. So how can the Torah say, you shall slaughter as I commanded you? This teaches us that there's an oral tradition. So you have a pasuk, and this is one of the clear statements, clear references in the written law and the scriptures, that there exists an oral tradition. And that oral tradition had the Almighty telling Moshe Rabbeinu concerning the veshet and kona. The veshet is the esophagus, and the kona is the trachea, the food pipe and the windpipe, that need to be severed in order to accomplish slaughtering. And how much must in fact be cut? Al rov echod ba'oif, v'al rov shnayim b'vehema. In the case of a bird, the majority of one of the two cubes must be severed. In the case of an animal, a behema, there you need the majority of two of those two tubes to be severed. So as far as knowing, how do you know that birds need slaughtering? Well, you know it from this oral tradition based on the pasuk of Vizavachto Kashir Tzivisicha. Well, Elamat Talmud Lomar Shotoach. So then what, according to Rebbe, is the meaning of Shotoach? It tells us that layer upon layer of birds fell to them. Ksiv lechem, uksiv shemen, uksiv dvash. There are three different references to the mon. One describing it as lechem, one as shemen, as oil, and the other as dvash, honey. Omar Rabbi Yossi Rav Chanina, Linorim Lechem. To young people, it appeared or tasted as bread. Lizakenim Shemen. To elderly people, as shemen, oil. And Latinokos Dvash. For infants, as honey. We mentioned earlier, but it's worth mentioning from time to time, that there are In agadic passages, there are things that are very deep and require much more explanation. Here, in the case of the mon, something that is of a somewhat esoteric nature, maybe putting things lightly. We mentioned before that the mon could taste like anything you wanted it to. So what does this particular passage mean? So it could mean, again, on a superficial basis, that if you have no a particular intent, so its natural taste would appear differently depending on your age bracket. We continue in the Gemara. Ksiv, the word in the Torah describing the birds appears as Shin Lamed Yud Vav. In other words, the letters are, as we just said, the Karinin, however, the way we read it as is Slav. The shin actually can also take on, if you're familiar with reading of Hebrew, which obviously you are, the dot on above the shin, if placed on the left hand, over the left head of that letter, it has an S sound, or a samach sound, and that leads us to read it as slov. So we have shlov and slov. Amar Rabbi Chanina, Tzadikim Oichlin Oisoi B'Shalva. The righteous, when eating the mon, they ate it in a state of peace and equanimity. Rishayim oichlin or soy v'doylan kesilvan. The wicked, they would eat it, and they would perceive it as silvan. Silvan are thorns. Interesting to note, in either Greek or Latin, Sylvan also has to do with the woods or trees or some type of growth, bearing similarity to the word Sylvan here in this Aramaic form, thorns. Maybe you're familiar with the state Pennsylvania, which is known as, which means Penn's, William Penn's woods. The Gemara continues, Omer of Chonon ba Rava, Arba Mine Slav Hain. There are four kinds of Slav. Slav is apparently an umbrella term or a generic term for a number of different types of birds. The Elu Hain, these are the formal types of Slav. The names are Sichli, Vekivli, Upesuni, Uslav. Mali de Kulu Sichli, the highest quality, the richest one is the Sichli. And Gria de Kulu Slav, the poorest quality of these is the Slav. Vave Ketzifrusa, it's like a Tzifrusa. Tzifrusa is a type of bird that was known at the time of the Gemara. So the reference to the Slav being like the Tzifrusa had meaning to them. They, in the time of the Midbar, would take their Slav, and the Tzifrusa is actually, we see in other Gemaras, you see in Gemara Sukkah, for example, it represents a very small type of bird. So they would take this very small bird, put it in the oven, they would put it on a skewer and put it in the oven. The tofach vave mole tanura, it would swell in the heat because of the fat content that was in this bird, it would swell and fill the oven. Umaskinun le aplesar rifi. You would be able to put this bird on top of 13 loaves. The achrona eno nechilas al yadei tarovas, and the bottommost loaf, the last one, couldn't be eaten straight because of the tremendous amount of oil that accumulated in it, but it only if you ate it together with something else. Rav Yehuda mishtakach le bei doni. We have a few rabbonim that are mentioned here, and Rashi says that these sages they also benefited from the slav, where Kodesh Baruch Hu provided for them. And they found their slav portions. Rav Yehuda found it mishtakach le bei doni amongst his barrels. Rav Chisda mishtakach le bei tzivi. Rav Chisda found slav amongst his wood supply. And Rava maisi le arise kol yoma me'agmo. Rava had slav provided for him by his sharecropper, who brought a slav in for him from the agam, from the fields, from the marshes, every day. Yumachad lo aisi. One day, Rava's aris is the sharecropper, didn't bring in his slav. Omar mai hai. Rava figured to himself, what's this? What's going on today? He doesn't come in with the slav. Solik liigra. He went up to a roof. Shamei liyanuka. And from the roof, he heard a child saying a pasuk. Tikomar shamati vatirgas bitni. He heard a child reciting that pasuk, and Omar Shma Mina, he concluded from that, Noch Nafshei de Rav Chisda, that Rav Chisda, who was Rava's Rebbe and also his father-in-law, in other words, Rav Chisda was his teacher and also the father of Rava's wife, that at that point Rav Chisda died. V'hainu de Amri Inshi. And it's based on this that people say, Bedil Rabba Ochil Talmidah, that in the merit of the teacher, the student eats. Now that the teacher is gone, so the student doesn't have that which he was eating in the merit of that particular teacher. Ksiv, again, two psukim that need to be resolved. One pasuk says, Vatal Shichvas Atal, Uksivu Redis Atal. One pasuk says the talis, the dew, the a layer of dew rose, and another pasuk says the dew fell. Omar Rav Yosi, Rav Chanina, tal milamalo, v'tal milamato, v'dome kemo shemunach bekufsa. There was a layer of dew from above, a layer of dew from below, and between the two, sandwiched between that, was the mon, and it appeared as if the mon was in a kufsa, in a box. Dak mechuspas. This also describes the mon. This posuk describing the mon. Omar Reish Lakish. Dovar she nimoach al pisa sayad. The word mechuspas is a no-tree cone, an abbreviation of these words, something that would melt in your hand. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Dovar she nivla be mosayim ve arboim ushimone evorim. Rabbi Yochanan, in looking at this word mechuspas, looks at the numerical value of it, and he says that its numerical value represents 248, which corresponds to the number of organs in a person. So that the mon was something that was absorbed in all of a person's body. The Gemara asks, one second, if you're dealing with number equivalent, and you count up the value, the number value of these letters, mem being 40, ches being 8, and continuing along those lines, tuvah have you come out to a larger number, more, namely 254, not 248. So the Gemara answers, Omar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok mechuspas ksiv. It's spelled without a vav. So it's true that with the vav it's 254. Subtract the vav, which is 6 in numerical equivalency, 6 from 254, you get 248. Tanu Rabbanan. We have a Tanaic source in which you see a diamond featured on the side of the Gemara. We have our Nosei Mivne heading. The diamond represents Deos Shonos Ech Lidrosh Hamilo Evor Abirim Beposik Lechem Abirim Ochal Ish. We're going to make reference to a posuk in Tehillim, Perek Ayin Ches, that says Lechem Abirim Ochal Ish, and we want to know what does that word Abirim mean. So we continue. Lechem Abirim Ochal Ish, Lechem Shemalachei Hashores Oichlim Oisoi, Divrei Rabbi Akiva. The word Abirim is a word that in loosely translated has to do with the strong ones. We changed the meaning of the word a little bit before when we saw Rabbi Yochanan's drasha, and he saw the word mechuspas, meaning 248, and we saw evorim, and we're going to see that drasha very shortly in this Tanaic source before it was presented as Rabbi Yochanan was an amora. But before we get to that, Abirim is a reference to the strong one, so Rabbi Akiva takes it to mean that the mon, or lechem abirim ochalish, is the food of the angels, was eaten by the ish. And we'll come back to that later, who the ish is referred to in this pasuk. Ukshinemru dvorim lefnei Rabbi Shmuel, and when this was told to Rabbi Shmuel, Omar lahem, Rabbi Shmuel's reaction was, Tzuvi imru lo leakiva, go tell Rabbi Akiva, Akiva to'isa, you made a mistake. V'chi malach esheres oichlem lechem, do the service angels eat bread? V'halo kvar ne'emar, the pasuk in describing Moshe Rabbeinu and his sojourn on Mount Sinai, where he was like an angel, it says, lechem lo ochalti, umayim lo shosisi, I did not consume bread, I didn't drink any water. And he was like that for 40 days, like an angel. So, elomani mekayim abirim. So then, what am I going to make of the word abirim if you're going to say it doesn't refer to angels because they don't eat bread? So what is lechem abirim a reference to? Answer, lechem shenivla b'mosayim ve'eborim u'shmoina evorim. It's the bread, the mon, that is absorbed in the 248 limbs of a person. There is a pasuk in the Torah that says that while they were in the desert, that they had attached to their weapons, they had a yosed. Without a literal translation, we'll say it's a reference to a type of shovel. They had shovels attached to their azeinecho, attached to their weapons. And that shovel was used for covering any waste that the people might have released from their bodies. So if you're saying that they were eating the mon, and the mon was absorbed into their limbs, and by saying absorbed, meaning absorbed and not released, so what was the need for these shovels to cover their waste if there was no waste? The Gemara says there was waste, but not from the mon. Dvarim shetagrei umos ha'olam moichin oison lohem. As they were traveling in the Midbar, they encountered different nations, and tagrei are merchants, umos ha'olam, of the different nations that sold them food as they were traveling through the Midbar. They ate from that as well. That was natural food and it natural results. Not absorbed, but rather was consumed and also produced waste. And that's what the Pasuk of Yosei Telech Azenecho is referring to. Rav Elozar ben Prota Omer Af Dvarim Shetagrei Mos Ha'olam Mochrin Lohen Mon Mefigan. Rav Elozar says that the mon had a positive effect even on the natural food that they had purchased. It mafigon, it caused it to be absorbed in their bodies. So then what am I going to do? How am I going to establish this pasuk? Answer, la'achar she'sorchu, after they went bad. Rashi says they complained about this. What we would think is a wonderful phenomenon, they complained about. They had experienced no need to relieve themselves, and they didn't feel sick as a result, but just realized they weren't relieving themselves. And after complaining about that, so then the Almighty said, okay, if that's what you're complaining about, now you're going to have to relieve yourselves, and now you're going to need the shovels for covering the waste. Omar HaKodesh Baruch Hu, the Almighty said, Ani omarti yu kemalach yashoreis, I intended for them to be like the angels. And this kind of echoes Rabbi Akiva's approach before, that the angel description does involve eating, but without any waste. So that's what I intended for them. Achshav ani matriach oisom shalosh parsois. Now that they've complained about it, and their complaint was, how can a person eat and not relieve themselves? Something must be wrong over here. This is something that's going to explode within us. So Kodesh Baruch saw they were complaining, and he says, okay, now you're going to have to relieve yourselves. And as a result of that, since they were a traveling camp, they would need to walk to a point outside the camp in order to relieve themselves. We're not dealing with some sophisticated plumbing system, but rather they would have to travel, walk three parsa. Eat one parsa is four meal. A meal corresponds roughly to a kilometer, so 12 kilometers would be the amount or the distance people would have to walk. And where did we get that number from? Dichtiv. Vayachnu al yardein mibeis hashimois ad ovel hashitim. Ad Evel Hashitim. The pasuk says that the camp of Israel stretched from Beit HaYeshimos to a place called Evel Hashitim. The Omer Rabba Barbachana, Lidi Chozi Liyahu Asra, Rabba tells us that I saw that place, Vahavya Tlosa Parsi, and the distance covered in the pasuk is a distance of three parsa. Vitona, Kishin Nifnin, E Nifnin, Lo Lifnin, Lo Tzdeim, El Achrim. When they would relieve themselves, they wouldn't relieve themselves to the sides of the camp, and certainly not in front of the camp, because you have a You have a traveling nation, and you don't want people trampling over waste. So the only thing that they knew was that they wouldn't be retracing their steps. When they encamped in the 40-year journey through the Midbar, they, as we indicated, they moved from place to place, and they moved based on divine instruction, and they didn't know, as we said, would they be walking, continuing straight ahead, or turning to the right, turning to the left. All they knew is that they wouldn't be walking back. So that is where they would relieve themselves. Now, if the length of the camp stretched 3 parsa, or 12 kilometers, people that were at the head of the camp would have to walk backwards, back to the other end of the camp and outside of it, a total of 12 mil, or 3 parsa distance. And all of that is a result of their complaining. The pasuk says, "V'ato nafshenu yuvesha ein kol." Omar, Omru, they complained about the mon, saying, "Osid mon ze sheyispach b'me'ehem v'yargim." The mon is going to yispach, is expand in our innards and kill us. Klum yesh yilud isha shemachnas v'eino motzi. Is there a person born of woman, meaning a human being, that puts things into a system and doesn't release them? And here we are eating this mon, and it's not coming out. It must be that it's going to blow up inside of us. That was their complaint. Dovar acher, lechem abirim ochalish. Here you can see another diamond attaching this to the list of droshes we saw before on the word abirim. We continue at the top of Ayin Vav. In this pasuk, the focus is really on the word ish. Ze Yoshua sheyarad lahem mon keneged kol Yisrael. This is a reference to Yoshua, who had mon falling to him. Keneged means literally opposite the whole nation of Israel. We'll explain that a little bit more by looking at the Rashi, but beforehand, let's just complete the Tanaic source together. How do we know that Ish is a reference to Yoshua? Ksiv hocha Ish. We saw in this pasuk, lechem abir mochal Ish. Ksiv hosam kach lecho es Yoshua ben Nun, Ish asher ruach boi. So Yoshua ben Nun is referred to as Ish. Rashi at the top, Ze Yehoshua, She'olo imoyshe ad chumei hahar. At the time of the giving of the Torah, there was an instruction that no one is to ascend the mountain together with Moshe. So the people remained at a distance from the mountain, from Har Sinai. Yehoshua accompanied Moshe till the very border, the Tchum Hahar. He accompanied to the border, and he remained there by himself all the time that Moshe Rabbeinu was on the mountain. Shneimar, Vayoke Moshe, Yeshua Mishoso, Vayal Moshe El Har Sinai, Vimtim Lo Yeshua Shom, Kol Arboim Yom. And we're told that he waited there for Moshe for 40 days. Shneimar, Vayishma Yeshua Es Kolam, Borol Yeshua, upon the Moshe Rabbeinu descent from the mountain, you're probably familiar with the golden calf incident. And that took place as Moshe descended from the mountain. And the pasuk says that Yoshua heard the sounds of the nation. Now, all it says is he heard the sounds. That teaches us that Moshe, that Yoshua wasn't with them. Yoshua had his own private mon delivery, keneged kosrael, meaning just like the nation of Israel had their mon delivery, Yoshua had his mon delivery. So positions Yoshua keneged kol Yisrael. It sort of giving a feeling of Yoshua being the equivalent of the rest of the nation. We continue in the Gemara. V'eimo Moshe, in the pasuk of Lechem Abir Mochal Ish, the word Ish, is it not a reference? Could it not be a reference to Moshe Rabbeinu? Dichtiv Oish Moshe Onov Moed. Here you see the word Ish in the context of Moshe, and it's the pasuk says that, and the man Moshe was a very humble individual. So why are you insistent on it meaning Yehoshua, the word Ish being Yehoshua? The more answers, Donin Ish me Ish, Ve'ein Donin Ish me V'ha Ish. The pasuk that has Ish together with Moshe isn't just the word Ish, Aleph Yud Shin, but it's V'ha Ish, there's a Vav Hey as well, making it less similar to the word Ish, Aleph Yud Shin, that appears in the pasuk we're darshening, Lechem Abir Mochal Ish. And only in the case of Yehoshua do you see the word Ish, Aleph Yud Shin, making Yehoshua the one referred to in our pasuk of Lechem Abirim Ochal Ish. Before we conclude today's shir, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.